Richard, hello. I was expecting your funky theme.
I can hum it for you.
Go on, give it a shot. It's the food, glorious food thing, but oh, never mind. Let's not stand on
ceremony. We don't want to pay more royalties to Lionel Bart's estate.
No. Now, Richard, welcome.
Thank you.
You've come to answer questions.
Yes, they've been streaming
from
your
culinary cornucopia.
It's amazing how many questions and just how confused people are about food these days, and I'm glad that I'm here to set you all straight.
Well, Mr. Cornish is the author of Brain Food, and so knows his onions, if we can mix our metaphors, I think. All right, I've got a question for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Why does asparagus make urine smell? Ask Zach on Facebook.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for this. Why does asparagus make our urine smell? And the thing is, it's one of the most amazing questions that's going to be asked, because it's all about the way the human body processes our food. It's the way that we actually sense things. Because what happens is there's a compound in asparagus called, now I'm really bad at remembering anything scientific, and that's why I have Google. No, that's why I have a large library. There's a compound called asparagusic acid that is not volatile, so you can't actually smell it. And until the body processes it, there's an enzyme in the gut that breaks this down into some sulfuric compounds such as dimethyl disulfide and dimethyl sulfoxide, which are actually, they're the smelly sulfurous compounds, and they're volatile, so they are actually at body temperature, because, well, urine is body temperature.
Pretty much.
They're volatile, so the molecules waft up and we can detect them. And so that is why it smells. But this is really, really interesting, because
I'm wondering why it matters, but go on.
No, well, it does matter, because we're all different. This is why I'm interested in food, is because we are all different and we all perceive things differently, because some people do not have the enzyme that breaks down the asparagusic acid.
And so therefore, their urine is unencumbered by the asparagus whiff.
But then there's another thing, that some people do have the enzyme,
yes,
but don't have the gene that allows you to detect these sulfuric compounds.
Oh, the complexity of human life.
It's Schrodinger. No, we won't go
Schrodinger's
there.
Urine. Let's have it as Schrodinger's asparagus. I think that's tidier.
Thank you very much. There's some people out there who think their urine doesn't smell, but it could.
Mm. I know several of those people who think their urine doesn't smell. Thank you, Richard, for clearing that up. Why does asparagus make urine smell? Zach, I think we have provided abundant proof.
That's money for old Rob. Everyone asks that question every time you go out.
All right, here's one from Nerida, who asks, what is kosher salt?
What is kosher salt? I'm lucky enough, I live in a very Jewish neighbourhood, and my local butcher is Jewish. And I actually had to go down and see him and ask him. And he was rapt that he had someone like myself asking questions. And he pointed me to Leviticus in the Old Testament. Well, he doesn't actually call it the Old Testament. And he's pointed out to Leviticus. Now, if you haven't read Leviticus, it makes Game of Thrones look like Neighbours in Fur. Mm. You know, that there's so much going on.
Can I stop you on Neighbours in Fur? I've not seen that.
Neighbours in Fur. It's coming to a musical comedy theatre near you. So what it says in Leviticus is, ye shall eat no manner of blood, whether it be fowl or of beast, in any of your dwellings. And so when you kill an animal, to make it to kosher it, you have to draw out the blood. And so that happens during the I about to use the word sacrifice, because that's what all my
butchering, I think, butchering, is the expression you're looking for.
Sorry, I spent a lot of time in Spain, and I always refer to in the abattoir, the act of killing an animal, of being the sacrifice. And so at that point, after that, you then need to draw the salt, the blood out of the animal, and they use coarse salt. Now, if you used a fine salt, it would dissolve and turn into a saline slurry on top of the meat. But if you use a coarse salt, the osmotic effect will still draw the blood out of the meat, but it won't dissolve the salt crystal. So you need a decent-sized salt crystal, and that's what kosher salt is. And so it's a salt that enables the koshering of the meat.
So this is like why we get salt on the red wine stain. for that same osmotic effect of drawing it out.
But at the same time, you do use salt to set certain dyes. And so
curious.
A friend of mine, a very good wine writer who shall remain nameless, actually, I've seen him. Someone spilt red wine on a carpet in a hotel room that we're celebrating in, and he went straight to the minibar, opened up a bottle of white wine, and started splashing that on the red wine stain. He said the only thing to get rid of red wine stains is white wine. But he said, but not New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay.
So that's what kosher salt is, and if you can't get it, you often see it turning up in recipes. So the alternative would be perhaps some coarse Celtic salt or some rock salt would be an adequate substitute.
And what you said there too about bleeding too in the kosher butchery. I mean, and that's where we have the great crossover with halal certification as well. It's a very similar process.
Yes. Yes.
Just different words, I guess.
Yes.
All right. Another question.
Oh, hello.
This is good. This is from N. Pearson. The cheese course.
Before cheese. Yeah, every time I hear the word cheese, I have to think of Peter Russell Clark.
Oh.
Where's the cheese?
G'day. Okay, so the cheese course. I always think of Wallace and Gromit.
Okay,
and
yes.
More cheese penguin.
Yes, cheese.
Cheese course. Before or after dessert?
Oh, where do you stand?
Instead of, probably.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I'll go there. I do not have a sweet tooth. I, in fact, have a fat tooth. And so I'll actually divert around pudding and go straight to cheese.
Straight to the cheese.
In fact, I'll actually just have cheese.
Is there a proper etiquette here, though? Is there a rule?
I remember hitchhiking around France when I was a young, slim, yet lad with hair, and I remember...
Sometime in the
mid-60s. It was a long time ago. And I remember going to an auberge and sitting down with a family, and I was left to dine with the younger boys, and so I'd used my schoolboy French, which was rather appropriate, as they were French schoolboys, and we had a conversation about the cheese, because I was about to eat my body weight in a lovely washed rind. We're on the outskirts of Lyon here, and some beautiful cheese has been served up, and I didn't realise that whole cheese platter was not for me. Non, monsieur, non, monsieur. And so they pointed out the boy said, a little bit of each one on the plate. Okay, fair enough. And so I just got a little bit of the white mold cheese, which is a bit like their version of the brie, and I would start to smear it like Vegemite on the bread. And they just were shaking their heads. You could hear Gaelic eyes rolling around the backs of their head. And I said, no, just cut it off and put it on a little bit of the baguette and then eat it. So fair enough. And the cheese had been cut into a wedge, and it went to take the nose off the wedge. And they said, oh, again, shaking of heads. And so there's a whole lot of etiquette. The French etiquette around eating cheese is that something that's eaten between the last savoury course and before the sweet course, because savoury, sweet, and it makes perfect sense. And also, your palate's set up for it as well. But the English, however, the English have a tradition of finishing the meal of like the whole evening feathering out into lots of port and Stilton. And perhaps it's nodding off and snoozing and snoring. And so
is this the ladies withdraw?
Ladies may withdraw now. Gentlemen, you may remove your coats. and so the English have this tradition that allows, other than the French abrupt finish, there'll be coffee served shortly, and then we'll be shown to the door. The English have this way of feathering it out, which I really like, particularly if things are going well in a night and everyone's enjoying themselves. We're Australia, we're a young country, we can make up our own traditions. And so I actually do enjoy having a little bit of cheese and wine at the end of the meal and continue on. The thing that really is irksome to some people is actually starting with a cheese course. We see it a lot, people setting out three or four cheeses and starting the meal that way. But there's a lot of calories in cheese. And what it does is actually dampen the appetite. And the food will always taste at its best when you have an appetite. So when you've got a certain amount of hunger, you will always find that food tastes better.
Right.
So don't leave the cheese to last.
Well, that makes perfect sense. There you go, Ian Pearson. You're Australian. You can make your own rules. Why, asks P. Carter, do some wines have notes of vanilla? Do they add it?
It depends on where you're getting your wine from. If it's,
and don't go there again.
No, don't. No, okay. There's some. I remember. When I was university days, actually sleeping on pillows made out of cask wine bladders, bursting in the middle of the night, waking up wondering why my bed stunk of fruity Moselle. There's like vanilla. There's a compound. It's basically a long chain carbohydrate called vanillin, and you can find it in vanilla, but also in oak, for example. And when you put wine in oak, the wine actually extracts that vanillin out of the oak, and then it goes back into the wine.
So it's one of those wine smells like blackberries and cowpits.
That's actually from the grape. This one's actually from the oak.
Okay.
Yep.
But still, there you go, vanilla. It's just a smell with wine, P. Carter. Don't be disturbed. It's not been added in. Blue Heaven, on the other hand, may well have been introduced.
Blue Heaven, notes of Blue Heaven.
Richard, thank you. Excellent answers as ever. Richard is the author of Brain Food. He'll be back in a couple of weeks to answer more of your culinary conundra. You can email them to us. blueprintforliving@abc.net.au, or check out the Facebook page. You can ask us a question there. Richard will answer, as you have heard, in exemplary style. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.